Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Our guest this evening is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. Dr. Daniels, welcome to the program tonight.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Dr. Daniels, would you like to share what our topic is for this evening?
Yes, I would. Our topic for this evening is incremental encroachment on the simple sovereignty of our bodies and how this affects our survival situations. And how we can prepare, how we can respond to it to have, you know, to increase our survival under stressful times.
That's great. That's great, hon. Okay, well, we have, I think, Dr. Daniels, you're our only guest this evening. So we have plenty of time, and would you like to go ahead and start and whatever is most convenient for you, do you want
Why don't I give a presentation, kind of cover everything since we have so much time, and then take questions.
Okay, good. I was going to say, do you want to take questions, you know, like during the program, or do you want to go ahead and make the presentation or then have questions to follow?
Well, probably better make the presentation because it's really a lot of twists and turns. So people can write their questions down, and then I can handle them all at the end. So that would be great.
Okay, sounds great. Okay, thank you, and welcome to the program, Dr. Daniels.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, well, as everyone knows, my name is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and I practice medicine for 10 years as a board-certified family practice physician. And a lot of things really just didn't quite add up. And now I've not been a licensed doctor for about, I guess 6 years now, 6 or 8 years. And medical care in the United States has really not progressed much despite lots of breakthroughs and incredibly increased costs. Some figures for 2012 put medical costs in the area of $2 trillion. Projections of 2013 are $2.8 trillion. Right, how you slice it, it's a pretty good chunk of change. And so it's a matter of discussion in a lot of circles. It's also, by the way, 17% of gross national product. But tonight's show is inspired by a special report in Time magazine written by Stephen Brill. And he entitles it, Bitter Pill, Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us. I thought it was a really interesting title because medical bills can't kill you. They can bankrupt you, maybe, but how could a bill kill you? So I thought it was a really interesting approach to things. And I read the article, long article, 20 pages about, and I was really concerned that it had nothing to do with advancing the health of individuals, but everything to do with advancing control over the individual. And this is really shocking because no matter how you slice it in the United States, healthcare is an issue, It's a topic that many people, you know, feel can be improved. There's opinions left, right, and center about things. And so I was surprised to see such an extensive article that didn't address what I believe to be the concerns of individuals. So what I'm going to do is review this article, talk about what it does talk about, and what this really, what are the implications of this. And so Mr. Brill starts by saying that healthcare spending is out of control. And that's, you know, can't argue with that. And by the way, there's 311 million people in the United States, and for that we're spending over $2 trillion. And he says hospital executives are gaming the system and sticking patients with bills that bear no relationship to care provided. Now, first of all, I think everybody's gaming the system. Not only hospital executives, but insurance companies, hospitals, doctors. You know, everyone's got this really fancy software where they can figure out, okay, how can I get paid? How can I get paid more? So everyone's computer program is kind of working with everyone else's computer program. So first thing, it's really amazing that he singled out hospital executives for gaming the system. All right. And then sticking patients with bills. Wait a minute. How can you stick a patient with a bill if the patient has health insurance? If the patient gets stuck with a bill, wouldn't that be a defect in their insurance policy that they had something that wasn't covered or they thought it was covered and it wasn't? So really amazing that out the gate, this introduction shows a fair amount of bias. And it goes on to talk about outrageous pricing and egregious profits that are destroying our health care. There's no such thing as outrageous pricing unless the value you're getting for the price doesn't equal the price. In other words, if I offer you a loaf of bread and I say, look, you know, you have to pay 10 cents for this loaf of bread, you probably say, man, that's a deal. Yeah, I'll take that loaf of bread. Here's my dime. Well, that's great. On the other hand, if I say to you, here's a loaf of bread, it costs you $500, and you're not going to be able to get bread anyplace else or eat anything else until you buy this loaf of bread, well, you might get a little upset. Well, because the value, which is a full belly for maybe half a day, is probably not worth the pricing of $500. So prices aren't too high. I think the problem is that the value of our health care is too low, that the value we're getting, the benefit we're getting from it is too low. And then egregious profits are destroying our health care. Who cares about profits? I mean, have you heard anyone complain about the profits of Apple Computer? No. Why? People, they offer a price for their product. People buy it. They're pretty happy with it. And really, you don't care who gets what profits as long as, you know, you pay for a product, you're happy with it, and that's pretty much the size of it. And then the last piece in the sentence is destroying our health care. And that is, of course, open for discussion. Is the health care system in the United States producing health, and is it caring? Now that would be an area for discussion. And he talks about an individual at this point who had a difficult experience with the health care system. A couple had insurance, but the hospital didn't accept it. And so they paid $48,000 in cash, and after 1 week of therapy, the hospital decided that they needed another $35,000. And, of course, the husband, who was the patient, was actually worse than before he started therapy. So now, there was not any discussion further in the article as to how this person, this patient, made out, but the author was concerned that hospital profit margins are 26%. And this, of course, draws attention away from the fact that the care was not effective, or worse, may even have been harmful. And, of course, he mentions that the hospital executive earned $1.8 million. Now, I'm not in favor of hospital executives earning high or low or whatever salaries, but, again, this draws on people's feelings of envy, maybe their greed. How come this hospital executive earns this much money and I don't earn that much money? It kind of changes the subject. The subject is health care, and is are we really getting our money's worth? And so that is a huge, huge issue that's just totally overlooked. And so then he talks about some possible solutions. And I think it's it's important to take a look at these solutions and see what these solutions really portend for the patient. So we feel we need to change our choices. For example, cover people at a younger age with Medicare, which means we would think that means giving them more access to medicine. On the other hand, we need safeguards to keep them from overusing the system. And so what are these safeguards? Well, of course, the government would have to examine each chart, have access to all the medical records, and even though a patient might decide they'd like to access a particular care, the government can say, no, you can't have it. Or if a patient decides they don't want a care, particular care, the government can say, hey, you must have it. And so this changes healthcare into really a tool of government control. And so then he suggests that payment into the Medicare system should be compelled, and that younger people who are not Medicare eligible should pay into the Medicare system at the same rate of their present private insurance. Now, just to check this out, I went online and said, well, how much would health care insurance cost for a 56-year-old person? And one particular example he gave was a lady who had chest pain and went to the hospital because she had chest pain. It was determined she had indigestion, and she was presented with a bill of $21,000. So $21,000 worth of health care for them to hand her a pill for indigestion. And, of course, the feeling was, had she had insurance, she would have been protected from this $21,000 event. And so I went online and looked up this insurance. They gave me a quote, and $1,600 per month is what it would cost. And that would be a $1,000 deductible and a 20% copay. So if you take a look at a $21,000 health bill, which is what she was facing, she would pay $1,600 a month, that's $19,200, plus $1,000 deductible for her encounter with the hospital, plus a $4,000 copay, total of $24,000. So had she had insurance, she actually would have paid more over the prior year, not just 1 year of premiums, than she would have suffered even being uninsured for a $21,000 encounter for indigestion. And so this really highlights the fact that having health insurance is actually more devastating than not having health insurance. And so the other solution he suggests is that people should be compelled to pay these kinds of insurances to the government every year, and that the 20% left over, person should not be able to buy additional insurance for more than 15% of the 20% unless they fit certain income guidelines and they have to apply to the insurance / government for permission to buy a policy that protects them for any more than 15% of the 20% gap. And so what we have here then is now you have to submit the equivalent of your tax return. And those of you who have children, you might have recalled the ordeal of applying for financial aid when your child went to college and all the extremely private information they asked for. And so now you have to go through that same process in order to buy insurance and submit that same insurance to the government for permission in order to get insurance. So this is what Mr. Brill recommends as a solution. Now, the other thing he points out, which may or may not be controversial, is that 5 of the top 10 employers in Houston are bigger than ExxonMobil. Well, what has that got to do with anything? As if nobody can be bigger than ExxonMobil, how is that the benchmark for size? And so he decided we should look at not only who should pay the bills, but why the bills are so high. And he believes that technology drives bills up, not down, which is possible. And he also states, and this is the crux of the issue here, that buyers are powerless. People who buy health insurance are totally powerless. This includes big insurance companies or even individual people. And it's a seller's market, and that's just not right. and it's almost 20% of gross domestic product, which we said is 17%. And employing all these people in the cause of curing the sick, he feels, is somehow inefficient. Now, again, he talks about employing people in the cause of curing the sick, and that's a nuance. In other words, they're not curing the sick. It's just a cause. It's like you walk in the street and you wave banners, but things may or may not happen. And so he's coined the word, the health industrial complex spends five times as much on lobbying our politicians as a military industrial complex. And this is something, if you believe it's a problem, that I think is a very nice, very neat solution to, and we're going to get to that later on. So as I mentioned before, $2.8 trillion in 2013 is projected for healthcare expenditures. So it's not going down, it's going up. Now, $800 billion of that is Medicare and Medicaid, which is rising faster than inflation and gross domestic product. Now, wait a minute. If the government-run program, which is Medicare and Medicaid, is rising faster than inflation and gross domestic product, then that means the increases are compounding, and it's only a matter of time before the Medicare and Medicaid expenditures will also be outrageously out of control. So putting people into a Medicare/Medicaid-type plan with health care costs out of control is not going to control health care costs. And so he mentioned that insurance and out-of-pocket uninsured, all expenses are $2 trillion, which we knew. But even more importantly, or curiously, is there's something called a charge master. Every hospital has it. It's a list of what things cost. And the prices on this charge master are very, very high. And total charges for the year as a percent of total revenue usually is somewhere around 35%. So if you have insurance, your insurance company is going to pay 35% of your hospital bill, and the hospital, if you have really good insurance, is going to agree not to bill you for the rest. If you're uninsured and you walk into the hospital, you're asked to pay 100%. Well, literally, they charge you three times what they charge an insurance company. And this is the crux of why uninsured people have difficulty with their health bills, because they are actually paying three times what the insurance company is paying. And this high rate of 100% is reserved for uninsured patients and out-of-town people. And he mentions that medical equipment salespeople are making $180,000 a year. Again, that's not the point. The point is the health care helping people? And he does say he believes that health care costs are resulting in safer and better care because the patient's not paying and doesn't know the cost until after the fact. So he believes that if you conceal the cost of care from the patient, then that makes health care safer and better. Are we getting close to some intrusive totalitarian behavior here? Yes. Now, this is another issue, defensive medicine. He believes that the hospital does MRIs and X-rays for to avoid being sued. And I can tell you as a former doctor, this is absolutely not true. If they were not being paid to do those X-rays that they call defensive, they wouldn't do them. They would find another way to defend themselves. But saying that it's to avoid legal liability is a very thin fig leaf, because any hospital will start prohibiting the performance of any test that's losing money. So this is a fig leaf that's being used to basically protect behavior that's maximizing revenue. So he feels we need malpractice reform. The malpractice reform he thinks we need is to create a safe harbor where doctors cannot be sued when patients are harmed. And he thinks this would bring down medical costs. So now you don't get to choose if you have a procedure done. You don't get to choose if you don't have it done. And if you're harmed, you don't get to sue. So this is the new solutions that are being proposed. Now, as far as malpractice reform goes, I personally believe that malpractice should absolutely be abolished. However, I believe it should be replaced with the criminal code. So if a patient is damaged, if a patient is harmed as a result of what a doctor does, then it should be treated as either simple assault, aggravated assault, whatever level of assault charges that municipality has. And if the patient dies and it's as a result of the doctor's interaction, it should be treated as any homicide. Now, there are degrees of homicide. There's accidental homicide. There's, manslaughter. There's all kinds of degrees of homicide. But it should be fit very neatly into the appropriate category. Why do I say this? Because 808,000 Americans every year die, not from their diseases, but from the therapy they receive. And until somebody starts experiencing the consequences of this outcome, nothing's going to change. And so Mr. Brill believes that healthcare is a utility. It needs a regulator to cap hospital fees. And there's an issue of price transparency. Now, I'm old enough that I was actually practicing medicine way back when. Actually, I was in medical school, late 70s. And at that time, it was a buyer's market, not a seller's market. So at that time, the insurance companies had all the power, and they were bullying the hospitals, and they were paying the hospitals below what it cost the hospital to provide care. So what did the hospitals do? The hospitals went to their politicians and said, hey, if you want us to keep this hospital open and keep your voters employed, then you need to pass some legislation controlling hospital fees to keep them artificially high so we can stay in business. And, of course, the politicians complied, and this is New York State I'm most familiar with at the time. I believe in Pennsylvania it was a very similar thing as well. And the insurance companies were just fine with that. What's happened now is, I'm sorry, they were not fine with that because the hospitals, got the upper hand through politics. And so now what has happened is the insurance companies say, okay, we need to convince the public to accept that hospitals are bad, insurance companies are good, and insurance companies should get lower rates. And so I'm not so sure that that is the issue here, or I should say the solution. Now, Mr. Brill has a lot of research, which is really good, and he has determined, he's got this little chart in his article, but basically the chart goes something like this. It ranks all the countries in terms of how much money they're spending on healthcare from the highest up to the lowest, and then it draws a line to life expectancy. And it shows there's actually an inverse relationship between money spent and life expectancy. For example, the United States spends $8,000 per person, this is in 2012, with a life expectancy of 79. Spain spends $3,000 in life expectancy per person for healthcare, and they have a life expectancy of 82. So in other words, they spend 62.5% less on healthcare, and people live 3 years longer. Now, there's a really obvious conclusion to draw here, but Mr. Brill, I believe, misses the obvious. And the obvious conclusion is that healthcare, not the bills, are what's killing us. And the more that's spent on healthcare, the more healthcare that's consumed, the quicker and sooner people die. And so just, I did the math, 62.5% less in healthcare is what Spain spends, and people live three years longer. So that's huge. I mean, wouldn't you like to see your health insurance premiums drop 62.5%, and in exchange you get to live 3 years longer? I think that's a great deal. Call that a sale. That's nice. And so one thing I can say, because I had operating medical practice, and Stephen Brill has noticed this too, is that low-wage workers get bare-bones policies that provide no money protection. So you have a low-wage worker, minimum wage, slightly above, they're paying policies for a health insurance card to sit in their pocket. When they whip that card out, it does not protect them from financial ruin at all. And what I found in my medical practice was even more shocking, which is that when a low-wage worker digs deep into their pocket to buy that high-end health insurance plan, their bills still aren't paid. That same health insurance company will reject the bills from the low-wage worker and pay the bills of an executive in the same company, even though they both have the same insurance coverage. And so as a doctor, I was like, wow, that is really shocking. And this poor person has really, you know, put out a lot of money to get this higher-end plan. The other thing he mentioned is that doctors at hospitals may prefer different models of hospital equipment. For example, if you have a broken hip, then you have to put in an artificial hip. Well, one doctor might prefer one brand of hip, another doctor might prefer another brand of hip. So Mr. Brill believes that if they all use the same prosthesis, then lower prices could be negotiated. As a doctor who actually practiced medicine for 10 years, I can tell you this is really absurd. It makes a dangerous procedure deadly. The doctor's hands, a doctor with small hands, or is going to do differently with a prosthesis than one with a larger hand. So the doctor's hand size, the weight of the doctor, the height of the doctor, his dexterity, his training, all make him more effective and a safer doctor with maybe one prosthesis than another. And so by forcing all doctors to use the same prosthesis, what you're doing really is you're creating a medical hazard that you don't need to create. And by the way, back in the old days when medicine was quite a bit safer, each surgeon bought his own tools, his own equipment, and he would bring them to the hospital. They would be sterilized, and those equipment pieces that were labeled with his name, they were extra engraved, would go to his operating room. So he would have tools that were perfectly sized for his hands that he had experience with. Of course, he's going to reuse them, right? So he took great care of them. Nowadays, it's one size fits all. Whether your doctor has a size 6 hands or size 8 hands, that doctor's got to make the same forceps work. And that doesn't make for a totally safe situation. Now, Mr. Bill also found, which I disagree with, but he found that patients are not influenced by price, so why tell them? Why should the patient know how much something costs since he's not influenced by price? I found in my medical practice that, you know, patients were very much influenced by price. And so telling them, though, what the price was allowed them to figure out what their budget was and make a decision that they were happy with. But he believes you should not tell them the price. And by the way, Obamacare wants to put a 2.39% tax on devices. What does that mean? That means if you get an artificial hip in, the hospital has to pay, or somebody has to pay.
Dr. Jennifer, are you there? I think she may have inadvertently hung herself up or something. Eagle, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, well, we can't hear her, but it says she's still on the board. I don't...
She might not know that she can't be heard, but she should by now.
Yeah.
If you want, I can try to call her.
Can you do that? Because I have no way of reaching her.
Okay. I'll try to call her.
Okay.
You want to play...
In the meantime, I will play a song.
Okay. Sounds good.
I'll look for one. Okay. Sorry for the pause, ladies and gentlemen. We will be right back and find out what happened to Dr. Daniels. I'm looking for a nice song to play. Let's try this one. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
the quarterback. Okay, will we get through to her? Okay. Dr. Daniels. Hi. Sorry, I don't know what happened. Sudden you.
Oh, I think it's just technology. If you lose me, then it's a good idea to do just what you did, call back on my other line, because this line, when it gets disconnected, I don't get a signal, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Gosh, I got pointed. I'm not really where you are off. I played a 3-minute song, if that helps.
All right. Was I talk? Did I talk about Obamacare and a 2.39% tax?
Eagle, are you there?
Yeah, you just started that.
I'll pick up there then.
Okay. Yeah. That's where we were.
Okay.
You had just very briefly touched on it, so that would be a good place to restart.
All right, wonderful. All right, well, Obamacare has proposed a 2.39% tax on devices. Devices are artificial things you put in people's body, like a pacemaker or artificial hip prosthesis. And hospitals have a 300 to several thousand percent markup on devices. It's a really big profit area for them. And so hospitals demanded a repeal of this tax. Not because the tax would make needed care unavailable, no. They demanded a repeal of the tax because it would destroy 422,000 jobs. Now, it's very telling when even the hospitals will not claim patient benefit in its own defense. In other words, the hospitals don't even pretend that what they're doing is helpful to patients. It's all about the dollars and cents. Don't put this tax in because if you do, you're going to lose jobs. And that's very discouraging. I think from the perspective of a patient, when you walk into a situation where no one expects you to get better, they know you're not going to get better, and they're just doing surgery on you to protect jobs, that's pretty disconcerting. And so Mr. Brill thinks the solution to all this is to extend Medicare coverage to everyone, have the people pay their private rate premiums, to pay it, of course, to the government. And this would not solve the problem. Why? Because right now the government pays very low rates. And these low rates the government pays are offset by high rates, basically triple the government rate, is what uninsured people or other people pay. So obviously if you have everyone pay at this low rate, which is 35% of charges, then you're pretty much going to wipe out profits / ability to cover operating costs. So Obamacare then wants to compel citizens to pay for insurance and subsidize those who cannot afford it. But wait a minute. How do you decide if someone cannot afford insurance? Yes, a means test. Yes, the person now has to divulge their net worth, divulge to the government all of their assets, how much money is in the cookie jar, everything. And what has happened in New York State, which is extremely punitive, I think, is people who own their own home but who don't have enough cash available to pay for insurance receive state insurance in exchange for signing their house over as a lien. And the government provides them any insurance that they need and builds up this big bill, basically a second mortgage on their home, and when they die, their house then goes to the government for a sale to pay off their health debt. And this is not exactly insurance. So for another example is this woman who had to pay $21,000 for a heart attack scare would have only had to pay $600 had she been insured by Medicare. And she was like 6 months away from being insured by Medicare. And so, again, as we mentioned before, had she paid her premiums every single month of $1,600, plus the $1,000 deductible and the $4,000 copay, she would actually have been worse off. Now, the next thing that Mr. Brillman points out is that the CEO, he interviews a CEO for Sloan Kettering, someone whose pay he previously mentioned he felt was a little bit high. And the CEO says, you know what, give us a fund for research and make sure the doctors get paid and we are happy. And this is interesting, but the point here is that having this system allows the government to totally micromanage not only your health care, but your life. So now, under the pretense of providing health care, you have to reveal all of your financial resources to the government. And with the recent IRS scandal would be the word, we now realize the government targets people it politically doesn't like. And so if you're in a position of revealing all of your assets to the government, and then maybe you write a letter to a politician saying, hey, you think the road should have been a little narrower or maybe a little wider, whatever, something you're not really happy with, then they can target you, they know where all your assets are, and they can penalize you accordingly. And this is really the danger of this type of plan that's being put in place, or being, in this case, proposed. Now, unless you're protected by Medicare, healthcare market is not a market, and that's what Mr. Brill feels. He feels that you need the government to protect you. Now, this is actually a false premise, because when you're enrolled by Medicare, you are not totally protected. So if you get a catastrophic illness, and we'll just, for sake of discussions, call breast cancer a catastrophic illness, I figured I'd look up a catastrophic illness to see how Medicare covers this. I called up a well-heeled Medicare recipient and who had coverage, and this person had got coverage for A, B, C, and D. You know the Medicare coverage, baby, she had it. And so I asked her what her plan covered. She says, well, covers hospital. I might have to pay $1,000, but anything in the hospital is covered. I said, well, that's good. She said, what about medication? She says, well, certain drugs, if it's generic, I pay nothing. If it's a little bit expensive, I pay 20%. And if it's a real expensive drug, I have to pay 80% of it. Okay. So you might not know, but a lot of the chemotherapy now is being given in pill form. And if you get a catastrophic illness like breast cancer, your chemotherapy can easily be $12,000 to $15,000 a month in terms of your chemotherapy pills. And so this person with Medicare coverage, everything covered, should she get breast cancer, would have a $12,000 a month bill for her chemotherapy. And so having Medicare is not the same as having protection. And that is a definite fallacy. The other thing he says is that if you don't have Medicare, you have little choice of hospitals or services. And again, Medicare definitely restricts your choice of providers because a lot of doctors don't accept Medicare. And so with Medicare, you have definite restrictions. Also, he says, you have no choice of tests or drugs. Wait a minute. This is not true. If you have a private insurance, you have no choice because the doctor decides. And if you have Medicare, you have no choice because Medicare decides. So either way, the patient has no choice. So under either system, the patient is disempowered. And so Mr. Brill did notice this, and he defends this by saying, because we have powerless buyers in the seller's market, the buyers, which would be the patients, would not know what to do if they did have a choice. And so therefore, patients should not have a choice. In fact, they should not have information because they wouldn't know what to do with it. And besides, he says, Medicare is accountable to taxpayers, Congress, to hospitals, to insurance companies and drug companies. This is balanced. Well, wait a minute. Medicare is 100% consumer finance. Why shouldn't it be 100% accountable to the consumers? So you see here, under the guise of solving what we thought was the high cost of health insurance, we've taken the patient and reduced him to a slave, basically, a slave of, well, either the government or the healthcare system, basically whoever wants it. And so Mr. Brill says, face it, healthcare is not a free market, and in order to fix it, the payer's got to have a fair chance, and that's why we need the government to step in. And what he wants the government to do is tighten up antitrust laws for hospitals so insurance companies can negotiate, you know, better rates. And, again, as I said, this is a cyclic thing. In the 70s, the insurance companies were on top, and the hospitals were appealing to government. He also wants to tax hospitals at 75% of any salaries over $750,000 a year. Now, this sounds nice, like an incredible penalty, but a couple things are going to happen. First of all, you can just take your hospital administrator, pay him $750,000 in cash, and the rest of the payment in another form. Or even worse, pay him $10 million. The government gets 75%, leaving him $2.5 million. And that 75% that goes to government is nothing more than a legalized bribe. For the government, giving the government now a financial stake in keeping hospitals profitable so it can collect more tax money and keeping executives higher paid. Now, the other thing he wants to do is amend patent laws to limit the profit margins on drugs and reduce drug prices to what's being paid overseas. Now, this is amazing. This is like almost nonsense. I live overseas, so I can tell you a little bit about overseas drug prices. Overseas drug prices are a lot lower. Why are they so low? Overseas, we have no insurance that covers drugs. And the patient in an overseas country will go to the pharmacy and buy one pill. The doctor will write a 30-day prescription, but the patient will buy one pill. That's all the money he has. And so, of course, if the drug companies want anyone to use drugs at all, they've got to really lower the drug costs. And so I would say in the United States, maybe the opposite approach should be used. In other words, withdraw the insurance. So price controls won't work since price shifting goes on. So if you have price controls, then what you do is the pharmacy or hospital will stick to the price controls for the group that is mandated to have price controls and just raise the price on everyone else. And then if you have price controls for everybody, there's no place to shift the cost. And so, of course, the service then just won't be provided, which may not be a bad thing either. And he thinks we should outlaw Chargemaster. We should outlaw these outrageously high and meaningless price sheets that are used to just simply gouge people that don't have insurance and peg prices to the software industry. Well, that's interesting. I mean, if you have an iPhone, what do you pay, $4 for an app? So maybe we should pay $4 for a day at the hospital. But, again, it shows a lack of sophistication. But what Mr. Brill wants is our health insurance premium should not go down, but the amount in health that health care industry receives should go down. And so that's really interesting. He also wants Medicare to restrict payments for MRIs, CT scans, and restrict what insurance companies can pay and cap the profit on lab tests for hospitals or doctors or whoever does lab tests. So this really sounds like an incredible defense of the insurance companies. So basically, the insurance companies have invested a fair amount of money here to help to get this article written and distributed. And it's this type of discussion of our healthcare issues that lead us even further into an abyss of spiraling prices and healthcare whose quality fails to improve our length of life or quality of life, and may actually kill us sooner. I mean, if you look at the correlation between companies, how much they're spending on healthcare, and life expectancy, there's a definite pattern there. And he wants to have drug companies post their gross profit margins for drugs on websites, thinking this will embarrass drug companies into lowering their prices. Of course, this misses the point. If the drugs worked, nobody would care the cost or the profit on the drug. And so, you know, we're going to take companies that are murdering patients and just punish them with embarrassment. So he thinks it's good that Obamacare has a rigorous appeals process when insurers deny claims. So here you are, you're sick, you're getting his care. Care maybe you want, maybe you're not getting care you do want, and you're getting care you don't want. Then you get stuck with the bill. And now, in order to appeal that, there's a rigorous appeals process with many, 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 many steps. And so, of course, the chances of anybody completing those steps and getting any kind of redress is just about zero. And since we have about 10 minutes left, I want to tell you about my concern, what I think the problem is. The problem is this. It's I believe, a carefully crafted propaganda piece, as is most discussion of the healthcare, to get the public to accept and have insurance companies get preferred status in exchange for being part of enforcing the police state. Now doctors are instructing the medical school to ask patients if they have guns. Are they religious? What's their religion? Do they go to church? How often do they go to church? These are considered standard medical questions. You can imagine doctors routinely gathering this information and turning it over to the government. And that information, of course, is not going to help the doctor figure out what dose of antibiotic or blood pressure medicine to give. So I think that in order to solve the problem, we have to have an objective. And I think the objective should be to get safe and effective health care. For the moment, we'll limit this to doctor, hospital, insurance type stuff. So we know, and the government has done research and determined this, that 89% of what doctors do is harmful or not helpful. Example, the $21,000 bill for heartburn. Next, that leaves about 11%. Next, 40% of all care provided by doctors is provided under pressure from hospital administrators to fill beds. Obviously, that can't be helpful because the decision to provide the care is based on the hospital administrator deciding the hospital needs more revenue. So it's at 4.4%. At least 6.6% of medical care is believed to be effective. And even of that, even if somebody is effective, it doesn't mean that everyone who gets it benefits. So let's say half benefit. That's a pretty generous estimate because a lot of things, drugs are approved as beneficial when only as little as 3% benefit. So it turns out that 6.6% and half is 3.3%. So 3.3% of all health care provided in the United States is safe and effective. Now, if you take 3.3%, when you multiply it by the per capita health care cost of the United States, you get $198 per year is what it would cost to provide safe and effective health care per capita in the United States. In other words, anything over $198 per year per capita spent on health care is actually destroying the patient financially or from a health point of view. So what should we do about this? Well, most insurances do have a 20% deductible, so we need to abolish health insurance. Absolutely. So the patient must receive 24-hour notice of cost of their care. Any overruns, whether it's a hospital overrun or a doctor overrun, has to be absorbed by the doctor or by the hospital. So the doctor or hospital has to give a binding financial estimate of what it's going to cost the patient. Next, every consent form must have at the bottom a price. Just like for a car or a loaf of bread or house construction, must have a price, and that price is binding. If a person chooses to have health insurance, the insurance company must give a legally binding pledge as to how much they will pay, not a percentage, but how much, a dollar amount. And so when a person consents to medical care, they know what the price is going to be and what their insurance is going to pay, and based on that, they can make a decision. And just this alone would reduce health care costs by over 50%. Next, under no circumstances can any court compel medical therapy. Only an individual acting freely can consent to care. This is important because when a court compels medical therapy, that creates artificial demand and drives prices up. Say nothing of no benefit for the patient. Next, permit citizens to accept cash pay increase on their job instead of health insurance benefits. For your average family of four, this is going to increase their disposable monthly income by at least $1,000. Now, this is where survivalists come in. If you have an increase of $1,000 per month in your annual disposable income, that's going to put you in a better position to prepare yourself to survive whatever might happen. Now, the next thing is it's going to allow you to decide what's going to improve your health. And the individual, that be you, can weigh the value of a new set of tires versus, say, a mammogram. And I bet you dollars or donuts that the tires will do more to provide, to prolong your life than the mammogram. And also, you can decide that you're going to spend that $1,000 a month on organic food or higher quality food. And we know that does much more for your health than any doctor visit or drug might do. Next, even when an expenditure is allowed, the insurance company must deliver the cash to the patient at the point of medical encounter. The patient can then choose to refuse care and keep the cash, or if he does consent to care, he can still refuse portions of the care, and the hospital must refund any balance on discharge. The guard against fraud, of course, here is that the hospital picks the payment amount, not the patient. Now, the hospital can charge what it wants, but must charge the same to all payers or give the uninsured person the same price it gives to the lowest contract it has, whether it's a contract with the government or whoever. So this plan would enhance personal freedom, it would decrease health care costs, and improve health outcomes. So I'll take questions. Hello?
Yes, it sounds exciting. Right now, I don't have any questions.
It sounds exciting. What excites you about it?
Well, the exciting part is that, you know, this information is that you're sharing is going out to the people, and it's very much needed. We have, you know, there's a good handful of us that are awake, but there's a lot more that isn't, and some people are trying to wake up, and hopefully the ones that are trying to wake up is on the call or will be on the archives of the call. So that's all exciting. That's why I say it's exciting, because it's information that's getting out to the people, whether they're listening at present moment or whether they're going to listen to the archives. So I'm excited about it, to say the least.
You know, you made a good point that some people are in the process of waking up. And waking up is a terrifying experience, because while you're asleep, you only see one alternative. And as you wake up, as you realize that what you thought was helping you is actually destroying you in so many ways, you don't see other choices. And so I think that this presentation gives you other choices, other ways to look at it. It's like, wait. If I have insurance and I have a medical encounter, why shouldn't the hospital be required to give me a bill in advance? And why shouldn't they be required to stick to that bill? I mean, people have built homes. If the contractor runs over, well, it's an overrun, and he eats that overrun, and then the next time maybe he'll do a better estimate. And so, of course,
right.
Why not hold the hospital to the same standard? They've got a heck of a lot more computers and sophistication and experience on their side. As you all know, the hospitals gather a ton of information, and they sell a lot of it, not with your name perhaps attached, but a lot of it is sold, like who's present, who's not, the delivery, whatever, all kinds of statistics. You know, it goes into the data bank, so to speak. So It's a reasonable request to have the hospital say in advance, what's this gallbladder going to cost? Because they've done so many gallbladders over the past year, they know exactly how much they cost. They can make an estimate. They can take the average or take the average plus one standard deviation, whatever. But pick a number, stick to it, and that is all they can ask from the patient. And the patient needs to know that up front. And the next thing is the patient needs to know up front exactly how much of that his insurance will pay. He needs to know that up front. And then he can make a decision.
Yeah, well, their idea is, well, when the bill comes out, we'll know, and you'll know. So they put it at whatever price if they want to. And, you know, this is one of the reasons, because there's a lot of reasons. This is one of the reasons why that I had this show, so that people, you know, what you know, Dr. Daniels, and you tell the public that's listening to this show, You know, that gives them the opportunity to decide what part of it that, you know, fits what they need. And, you know, this is what I consider really good, because it gives back your freedom and your sovereignty to you when you have the choice to make the decision whether you want something or you don't. And that, to me, is so important to have this radio show like it is, where the construction of how the guests come on, like a week or two ago, it was entirely different than this one, okay? And who knows what the next one's going to be, because, you know, whatever the demands are on what we are talking about determines how we approach it. And, you know, so this is the exciting part, folks. I'm trying to give you the opportunity to really step up to the home plate and say, I want to put that ball out of the park on the next pitch that's delivered to me. And then you focus on it and you pitch it, you know, it's pitched to you and you knock it out of the ballpark, because that's what you wanted to do. Well, how can you knock it out of the ballpark if you have false information of when it's coming? If you're not up to the bat and that ball comes across home plate, you can be, you know, you lose. Okay, so having this information puts you in your position. The bat's cocked and you're ready to hit that ball when it comes across, because you know it's going to be coming across in the next second or two, because you can see the pitcher winding up to give his delivery. So this is important. No matter which show it is, it's important that you get this message. And I thank Dr. Daniels for all of the hard work that she puts in and what she's had to suffer to be in the position she's in now. I mean, you know, this is no cakewalk. They are attacking us on every level, just as a little thing, and I don't want to get off track here, but just as a little thing here, I've been trying my best to eat foods that are good for me, okay? The more time that's gone by, the more I try to eat foods that are good for me. In between, because I don't have a whole lot of money, okay? In between paychecks, sometimes I run out of the money to buy something good. Well, before I got in this position that I'm in now, I saved back all the groceries I possibly could. Well, needless to say, half of the groceries that I thought was good are actually GMO. And so if I ran out of whatever I have, which I did a little bit in the last week here, I have to knowingly eat GMO food, because I don't get paid for another 5 days from now, okay? And so, for the last 3 nights, my stomach has been so upset, I've heaved up, and all I'm heaving up is the GMO products. They are attacking us, and usually you can't tell the difference, and that's why I'm saying this. That's why I'm giving you my story, okay? If you're used to eating the GMO foods, your stomach has accepted what's going in, and you don't notice a difference. But when you clean up your, shall I call it, when you clean up your act and you start eating more properly, if you get back on any of that GMO food, oh, my God, your stomach is going to tell you, get rid of this now. And you'll start heaving up. You'll start having trouble, diarrhea, stomach aches, whatever.
Hi, Dr. Daniels.
So, anyway,
hi, Doctor.
I don't mean to take any time away from you, Dr. Daniels. Yeah.
No, Dr. Daniels had dropped, and she just called back in.
Okay, well, I was about to give it back to her, Taylor. I apologize for taking a few minutes of her time.
Okay, well, we're at the halfway point, so we're going to take a couple minutes break, okay? And we'll take it with a grain of salt here, and we'll see. We'll go ahead and take our break and give our listeners a chance to formulate any questions, should they have any. I will invite everyone, if you do have questions, to either put them in the window on the Universal Voice page on the pinned post. If you're not on Facebook, rather you are listening, call in, you're listening to the player, call in 646-716-4984 and then press the number 1 to raise your hand if you have a question or comment. Again, that number is 646-716-4984 and then you would press the number 1 if you have a question or comment. We'll go ahead and take our midpoint break for about 5.5-6 minutes, and we shall return in just a minute.
Denise?
Yes?
Before you go, I don't know what song you have up there, but if you can pull up, You Don't Have to Be a Refugee.
I don't have that available right at the moment. But
if you have it,
I'll play one and see if I can find that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years. Thank you.
building jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want if you want, 'cause you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the children play?
Okay, we are back. Eagle, I can play that song as a closing song. I had to re-upload it. I did just get it, but I had to upload it.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
You know me, I'm easygoing.
Yeah. Dr. Daniels, you must have done a wonderful job of presenting, because I have no questions.
Wonderful. Okay, great.
And I take that as a good sign. When you cover your bases correctly, we don't get questions. When you're thorough and everything, then we don't get questions. So that's
okay,
a good sign.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I'm going to sign off then.
Okay, honey. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on with us. Eagle, do we have do we know what our next week's program is going to entail?
I'm not sure yet, but I can talk for a while on some subjects that I want to touch on. So thank you very much, Dr. Daniels.
She already dropped. She didn't get a chance to say goodbye. Her phone disconnected on her.
All right, well.
Okay, Eagle, if you want to share a couple little things, that's great. Otherwise, we can, table the program for this evening and we can next week we'll have like I said, I don't know who we have planned on next week, whether it would be Betty or or what we have scheduled or what's in the possible work. But,
well, I'm working on a few different projects, so we'll play it by ear, and I'll give my spiel, and whatever length of time is after that, we'll play the song and then close off.
Okay.
That'll be okay. All right?
Okay.
All right. So back to my little trying to open up people's eyes here for a few minutes. If you would indulge me, please. There are so many things to talk about. I have seen so many things in it. A lot of it makes me wonder, is there anybody in this world that really cares anymore? And, you know, you look at people because it problems are not all just the government, the dark cabal, their minions. A lot of the problem are the people themselves. And the number one problem with that is greed. There are people out there who don't know. Who are absolutely against anything that is going to take their rights away, but yet at the same time, these same people will, you know, do whatever they want to do because, you know, it's greed. I mean, without naming names, I can tell you one or two that I know personally that, you know, that they have their business. And I'm going to watch what I say here so I don't give away who it is. They have a tendency to think that, well, you know, they'll do business with other countries who don't have a lot of income coming in because they can't afford to hire 10 to 20 American people for jobs. All right, so, and I've talked to them about it because I know them personally. And I told them how I feel about it and how I thought that they were being, you know, cruel to those people who they have doing their work and to the American public because the product is sent back over here and then we buy it. And this is all based on greed. There is no reason why they couldn't take and hire American people to fix the product up for them and then sell it to us here in America or anywhere else if they want to sell it. And I am not against people making money in other countries. That's okay. That isn't what I'm talking about. I am talking about the fact that jobs are taken away from the American public, that the jobs that are being taken from the American public, those people are working like slaves. Can you imagine? I mean, picture this, folks. Can you imagine getting anywhere from $75 a month or less as a paycheck per month? And yet we as the general public buy into this by buying the cheap product that doesn't even last for two hot seconds. And yet we are condoning through our actions, not our words, but our actions, we are condoning the fact that, it's okay. It's just business. Oh, yeah, I get to buy something for $10 when anywhere else it would have cost me $100. But that's all greed. When the ascension comes, and I'm almost sure that everybody on this call knows about the ascension, okay? when the ascension comes, everything's going to be different. And we, if we want to be anywhere, we had better get our tails off the ground and start doing what we're supposed to do, because otherwise we will have one hell of a hard time. We will have a hell of a hard time coping with everything that's put on us seemingly at 1 second, but it's not. It's being put on us a little bit at a time. That's why this show goes on. That's why other shows goes on. That's why Drake has his show. That's why everybody that has these kind of shows to enlighten people have them, because they're trying to wake people up. Because when the day comes, if the ascension comes and there is no getting around it, we had better be prepared for it, because life will be a whole lot different than it is now. And why wait until the last second to clean up your act? That's why I started a long time ago, and that's why I'm still cleaning up my act. I am nowhere near being perfect, and I don't claim to be. I'm just as human, and I've made mistakes just like I'm telling you folks about. But we're human, and this gives us the opportunity to make things correct. And all I'm saying is I would rather make things correct so that when the ascension gets here, I'm not caught with my pants down, bluntly. I mean, look at it, folks. We have a job to do. That's why we're here. All of us. Whether you're listening or whether you're talking or whatever on things, whatever, you have a job to do. And how are you going to feel when you try to answer up to not caring about what you need to do? Not what somebody else needs to do, but what you need to do. Do you think I have fun sitting here talking to you and telling you these things? Hell no. It's very nerve-wracking, because I have feelings like the rest of you do. But things have to be said. There is no time for sunny-side-up eggs. They have to be scrambled. Whether we like them that way for the time being or not, they have to be scrambled. We have to see what's going on. We have to be able to control our emotions. We have to be able to control our thoughts. I know this is a lot different than what it started off to be, but Dr. Daniels, chose to, in her presentation, and that's okay. I get a chance to give my presentation, which I usually hold back, mostly. Sometimes I say a little bit, but I'm tired of keeping my mouth shut. I'm tired of seeing people hurt. I was looking at a YouTube the other day, and I'm sure some of you have seen it, where this California couple, the lady was recording it. The man was telling the police there was four or five of them. They wanted into their house, and there was no really big reason. As the man was trying to say, he was only, he said, there is I can't think of the word right now. There is no problem. I'll just put it that way because I can't think of the word. There is no problem in our house. One of our children's outside playing. The other one's in the house. Domestic. There is no domestic problems. Why do you want in? And they kept threatening that they were going to bust the door down. Well, they finally busted the door down. They walked inside the house and tased the woman who was taking the picture,
Why haven't we as a nation said enough? I'll say it as politely as I can. It is effing time to do something, not violent, but do something by demanding justice. I don't care. Sunday is a great show.
Absolutely, and thank you very much, Eagle. It's been a wonderful evening. Thank you, Dr. Jennifer Daniels, for appearing with us this evening. And thank you, audience. And we will see you next time on the Eagle's Nest. And Eagle, did you want me to play that song you requested before? Is that the one you want me to play?
Can't you see I'm hurt?